This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, you're listening to Remarkable Results Radio. I'm your host, Carm Capriotto, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts. Hey, did you know that we've got over 1,000 episodes in our catalog? Don't forget, reference my website, remarkableresults.biz, to search any topic or keyword that you'd like to hear more about. Too many business owners are silently struggling and they think they are the only one. Or maybe they do want to elevate their business to the next level, but they've been stuck in the day-to-day that, of course, leads to the month-to-month and then year-over-year struggle. Hey, before you know it, the only thing progressing forward is time and the only constant is change. Now, in this episode, Scott Wheeler highlights the key foundations needed for a successful automotive service business. He also references his book, How to Make Money and Stay Sane in the Automotive Service Industry. And it reads like a blueprint for your business, full of charts, graphs, and formulas. I think you'll enjoy this. Thanks to our partners, Apex and Shopware, for providing you this episode. You know, Apex 2021 has a brand new area. It's called Repair Shop HQ, and they designed it with you in mind. This is a one-stop destination, and it's being designed to meet the product, equipment, and training needs of shop owners and managers and technicians from the entire industry. It's all happening at Apex 2021, November 2nd through the 4th in Las Vegas. There's still time. AAPEXshow.com. Go register, and I hope you stop by, see me. Love to meet you inside of Repair Shop HQ. Ring, ring, it's the 2020s calling. And you know, they're telling you it's probably time for an upgrade. Head over to the internet and type in getshopware.com. You know it. It's time to type it. Getshopware.com. These friendly folks are excited to meet you and share all that cloud-based shop management has to offer. Hey, don't forget, all live videos are on my Carm Capriotto YouTube channel. Use it as your free webinar during lunch. Hey, a warm welcome to my friend Scott Wheeler, president of ACGI, the Automotive Consultants Group, Inc. Scott, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Carm. How are you today?
I'm terrific. Thanks for being here. It's been a while, and I had to have you on because I got this 40-pound book sent to me, and while I couldn't wait to jump in it, and I did, How to Make Money and Stay Sane in the Automotive Service Industry, the 2021 edition. Nice job on that book.
Thank you, Carm. And you notice How to Make Money and Stay Sane, the two are sometimes diametrically opposed.
Oh, they are, well, for sure. And I would know because with over 1,000 episodes on this show, I've heard all those interesting stories. Well, look, you're a management consultant inside of our industry. Here's what we're going to talk about, everybody. The fallacy on sales is a sole focus of trying to be successful. Gross profit margin we're going to talk about, production staff incentives, and maybe you'll even cover effective labor rate.
I will.
Cool.
I will.
Well, thank you for doing that. So I'm reading the book. It's a fable. It's a story of Bob. And I loved who did the opening thing, the introduction. It was Dutch Silverstein. He called you a kindred spirit.
Yes, he did. That was an honor.
Well, we'll talk more about some of the stuff that's in the book. So let's jump in this. You know, a lot of times people just say, we just got to grow sales and we're going to solve everything.
Yeah, right. Not quite that simple, Carm. In this book, it's cultivated and culminated from 21 years of my consulting experience to mostly independents, although a lot of dealerships as well. And it chronicles Bob, a fictitious character from Bob's Garage. And Bob is the industry average, 49 years old. He's got 28 years total experience as a tech. He has two full-time techs. He's a service writer. His shop labor rate is about $95 an hour. His paycheck is an abysmal $500 and change. He's doing everything. He hasn't had a real vacation in many years. He's sick of working 60-plus hours a week and not really making any money. His marketing program consists of local advertising. And he knows he can do better, Carm, but he doesn't know exactly what.
That's a sad, sad scenario.
It is, but luckily there's help for him. We begin with the end in mind, as the saying goes. So we sit down with Bob, and we look at his goals and his aspirations. Why is he in this business to begin with?
I don't have any goals. What do you mean? Goals? Goals, that's a tough word. That's a four-letter word. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. But we have to understand, and we have to help Bob to understand what's in it for him. He's listening to the same radio station we all are, WIIFM. What's in it for me? So we set him down and we ask him some tough questions about why and when and how and so on and so forth. And then we put together a cohesive plan of action to help him to get from where he is to where he wants to be, which is, by the way, achievable.
Yeah, but I got to stop you right there. Is Bob willing? Would you be investing your time or would he be investing his time if he wasn't saying, enough is enough?
Short answer, no. Those clients, and I've had a few, that are not willing to change, because let's face it, change is painful for most of us. But if they're not willing to listen and try new things, you know, they say the definition of insanity, of course, is doing the same things over and over, expecting different results. So if Bob is sick and tired of being sick and tired, is he willing to change and adapt and learn some new things? So we begin right there.
So if you've got the willing candidate who says, I got no choice, I can't live on $25,000 a year, I'm not paying my bills, I can't find any really good people because I'm supposed to pay them twice what I'm currently paying my guys. And, you know, I mean, it's almost like I am naturally just disintegrating and going out of business.
That's very true. And I've come across many of them. Only once in my career have I suggested somebody shut the doors. And they did, unfortunately. They brought me in too little too late. Cash flow was non-existent. And the end was inevitable.
It was probably the best advice they ever got.
Well, it was a cold, hard truth, and many people don't like hearing that, but hey, they pay me to tell it like it is and not sugarcoat.
Just fixing sales isn't going to be. That's the fallacy of it. When you sit down with someone who has that willingness, okay, Scott, you've got me hook, line, and sinker. I'm with you. I'm gonna follow you like I'm a disciple. Where do you start?
My process is proprietary, but I usually begin by pulling their financials. I do that. I sit down with them. I have a discussion as to why, when, how to, and so on and so forth. I look at the financials and I extrapolate certain key pieces of information. This information tells me the gross profit margin and the various profit centers like labor, parts gross, sublet shop supplies, hazmat, other, tires. I've worked with restoration shops, which are very unique and very challenging. And we start there and lay out a groundwork combined with their goals. What age are they? Do they have a family? At what age do they hope to retire? Do they have an exit strategy for their business? And so on.
I guess I was really looking for a different answer, Scott, although your answer was perfect. The answer that I was kind of looking for, which I want to try to get through to our listener, you have to fix the person first? Is it the person in the mirror who's got to have the right attitude to move forward? I mean, I guess you wouldn't be at that point of pulling the financials if you didn't think that person was ready to fix themselves?
Well, you're exactly right, Carm. I mean, they've got to be willing and be open to change. And I've got a video on YouTube regarding change. And in the center of a triangle, now the triangle is the strongest geometric form known. In the center of the triangle is change. On one leg of the triangle, you have commitment. On another leg, you have plan, and on the third leg, you have action. If you remove any one of those components, the triangle will collapse in on itself and change will not occur. And they're all interdependent: commitment, plan, and action. As an example, if you have a plan and you take action on the plan, but your commitment is weak, as soon as you hit a roadblock, change will not occur. You'll stumble and fall.
Yeah, you got to learn to tough through that stuff and realize. And as you go back to the word goals, you say, "Well, listen, we're never going to get there if I give up on this." And a lot of times, maybe you pick up the phone, you call your consultant, you call your coach, and says, "Hey, I just hit a roadblock. Walk me through this. Give me some ideas." Because when you work with somebody, you're not doing it alone.
Not at all. Many times I get involved on a pretty personal level with the significant other, perhaps a wife. I meet their kids. I meet their dog. I mean, it's a family. And it's a family involvement, a family effort. Everyone has a stake at claim.
Listen, we've got the top shops that are listening that listen to this podcast, and I always ask them, please recommend it to a friend. I know you know a friend who may be struggling, and they're just hiding behind the fact that they have all these great secrets, and they really don't. And you know, Scott, what I have seen so much is the growth of the professionalism of our industry. They've gotten coaches, they've joined networking groups, 20 groups, business development groups. And they're learning from each other, because there's not a lot of secrets in this industry. It's just a lot of hard, smart work. And one of the things you said in your book that I loved, I just circled it. All business is a math problem.
It is a math problem. And once you understand the numbers that make up the math, it doesn't end there. There are benchmarks in our industry. What should labor gross profit margin be? Well, it depends on your product mix. What about parts margins and so on? Every aspect of your business has a number or a benchmark that is an industry standard. And there's some discussion amongst my peers about what those numbers should be. But by and large, the individual, the business owner, doesn't know how to make those numbers go up or down.
Most coaches have their own sets of KPIs, but where they put labor, is it in cost of goods? Is it in the expense line? The bottom line is everyone's hunting for a strong double-digit net operating income. And even if the KPIs are different, you can still accomplish the same goal.
Absolutely. If you look at $1 coming into a shop, Carm, how much of that is derived from parts? How much is derived from labor? How much is derived from tires? Hopefully you're separating the tires out because of the low margin on tires, it's going to dilute the margins in the other areas. And what is your gross? And then what are your total operating expenses? And then at the end of the day, what do you have left? Your net. And unfortunately, in my experience, most shops are in a single-digit net and not double.
Let me say this. That's why I do what I do. That's why you do what you do. We're always doing interviews. We're always asking the questions that hopefully, Scott, motivate someone off of, I call it, top dead center. They're stuck there. And they need to get on that that rotation wheel. Because it's never a positive upwards trend. There's always, you know, it's kind of like the stock market. As much as, you know, you're going to have your bad days, you're going to have your good days, but hopefully more good.
That's the hope and anticipation. You know, when I first started consulting back in the 99-2000 timeframe, I thought I had the perfect solution. And I had an A list of clients that I was going to go talk to. And boy, I was going to save the day, right? Well, what I didn't anticipate, Carm, was what I call the ego factor. So many of these shops, I would ask a question like, do you know what your break-even point is? Do you know what day of the month your break-even is? And I would get answers like, well, if I have enough money left in the checking account by the end of the month, I've had a good month. And that that kind of threw me back and caused me to reevaluate not only what questions I was asking them, but realizing that there was a long, strong ego involved.
That whole humble piece is something we talk about a lot, and I completely agree. You cannot run a business based on what kind of cash that you have at the end of the month. It does not equate to success. It just equates to greenbacks. So here's the deal. I didn't know that in 3 months I just blew a lift, or I need a lift, or something happened to the tire machine. And you go ahead and you spend the cash halfway through the month that you think you have, and you buy that piece of equipment, or you spend that money on an expense, and then you can't pay your parts bill, and then you can't pay your heat and your light, and you decide not to cash one of your own paychecks. And all of that, all of those conditions are wrong, wrong, wrong.
But I've seen it happen over and over again.
Is this an update to a book you previously wrote?
It is. I originally wrote it some years back. It's a culmination of my experiences consulting, what I've learned, how much I've grown as an individual, and how much I've grown as a consultant. And the 2021 version of the book chronicles Bob, the fictitious character, as we mentioned, and it's been modified and enhanced to include things like a deeper discussion of effective labor rate, marketing and advertising in the 21st century. A lot more math is involved, a lot of charts and graphs, hopefully laid out in a very clear and concise manner, where somebody can pick up the book and follow along and say, aha, now I get it.
I love there's a chart in the back of the book, page 218. I mean, I think there's over 225 pages, an ASE certification bonus program. People talk about it, but, oh my God, you've already done the math.
Yes, I have.
It's there. It's so cool. And, you know, how many certifications you have, policies, procedures, employee appraisals, job descriptions. Oh my God. I mean, you talk about trying to be HR compliant, or you're trying to make sure that everyone has a job description that reflects their duties, because if you don't, how do you discipline toward the right performance and values?
A lot of people don't realize how important these things are, but how can you hold someone accountable? Let's say a technician or a service advisor, how can you hold them accountable towards certain goals when they don't even know what those goals are? You know, I mean, I'm a firm believer in clear, concise communication in the form of a job description, laying out the goals. Hey, you need to upsell so many billable hours per RO this week. You know, what are your service recommendations? Or are you simply taking orders from the customer and saying, I want an oil change? Okay, well, if it's an 80,000-mile truck, an F-250, what else is wrong with that truck? Surely something. What are your technicians inspecting? Are they required to inspect? Maybe fill out an MPI. And then pass that on to the advisor, who then translates that into a possible upsell to the customer who needs. I would never suggest selling something to a customer that something they didn't need. But come on, man, a truck with 80,000 miles, surely it's got worn out tie rod ends or something, right? And it's our job to inform the customer and keep their vehicle in a safe and reliable fashion.
Hey, Carm here. Coming up, find out why production incentive plans are important to your employees. With registration now open for Apex 2021 in Las Vegas, you can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. Hey, I can't wait to reconnect with all of you in person and share stories of our time apart, both personal and professional. And I also can't wait to sit in on the technical and business management training specifically for you, the service professional. Now, with more than 20 sessions, you'll hear from the best of the best, including John Thornton, who will lead a session on fuel trim diagnostics, and Bob Ward, who will share business sales strategies and design. Make sure to also experience the new Repair Shop HQ and Joe's Garage. It's designed with you in mind. And also, visit the show floor to see many new products and emerging technologies. Keep in mind the dates, November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Be there. Hope to see you. Register now at aapexshow.com. The automotive industry is blazing through with so many twists and turns and changes. Careful not to crash. Yet amidst it all, the demand for repair is a constant. So the questions remain, will repair shops adapt or die? Well, our friends at Shopware Shop Management Software get it. Their CEO is a shop owner. They understand what it takes to repair cars, and they're ready for the next big thing in automotive. Shopware tailors mainstream web-based technology to the needs of the industry's leading repair shops. You can run entirely digital, phone optional, and paper-free. Interactive online repair orders will not only meet the needs of contemporary drivers, but they are blown away by the experience. Connecting the aftermarket together, Shopware's ecosystem enables next-generation shop efficiency and customer satisfaction without compromise. Full-service onboarding and best-in-class support provide everything a shop needs to transform its business and stay competitive long into the future. Enjoy more accurate quotes, more profitable jobs, busier technicians, and of course, happier customers. On the web at getshopware.com. I noticed the income statement and the balance sheet in the back of the book. And if somebody's living off, you know, cash accounting, I have money in the, you know, and they took their numbers and they applied it to these blank forms, they would be able to get a whole better view of their business.
Yes, they would. However, I still maintain hook up with a qualified CPA. And let me quantify that, Carm. I almost always get engaged with my client's CPA. The reason is simple. If they're performing their financial audits off of QuickBooks, which is a very good program, however, QuickBooks can be used for a gift shop, a bakery store, a clothing store, what have you. And it doesn't necessarily extract out the variables in an automotive service and repair business, like we've already mentioned, labor. Well, labor drives about 50% of the overall revenue stream, parts, generally the other 50%, tires, shop supplies, hazmat, and so on. So most CPAs don't know to split those things out. So if I go in and I see a low overall gross profit margin and I know that they're selling tires, I may say, okay, are you splitting out tire sales and tire costs and tire back end money from the overall picture? And what do those numbers represent? Are they good or are they bad?
That is so smart, and I totally agree with you. I don't think you can do it without a good CPA, Scott. And, of course, be it the consultant or coach, having a strong relationship with them. Do you find when you bring on a brand new client, Scott, that they're so overwhelmed in the first 6 months they almost feel like just giving up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very common. There's generally two types of business shop owners. One might be a technician that was above average, and he looked at the numbers, he looked at his paycheck, maybe he's working for an independent or maybe a dealership, and he says, hey, they're charging $1.20 an hour for my labor, and I'm only getting a percentage of that, maybe $30-$35 an hour in today's world. What if I go out, hang a shingle on a building, run my own show, then I can keep the entire $1.20 an hour?
Oh, no, I'm going to charge 100 because I'm just starting and I want to beat them down the road. I mean, I know I'm being so super facetious here, but I mean, sometimes that's the mentality. I've done interviews with young shop owners 6-7 years in, and I said, so what was your strategy opening up? Oh, we were going to charge less than everybody around us. And then they said, we made a big mistake.
There's a cliche we use in Georgia called the worth of the thing is the price it'll bring. I would never recommend that a shop be the lowest price in town. And first off, you set your labor rate based on cost and the necessary profit margin to realize the necessary gross profit to cover expenses and leave you with hopefully about 15 cents at the end of the day for every dollar coming in.
That's a good number to have. We said we would talk about gross profit. You just mentioned that. Gross profit matrices, are you a fan of them on shop management systems?
I am. You're talking about labor pricing grids?
Labor and parts, yes.
Yes, absolutely. On parts, that's relatively simple. You want to have a parts pricing matrix. Most good shop management software systems will allow you to put in your own matrix. However, I've walked into, I can't tell you how many shops, and I can tell by the management software, they never not once got into that pricing matrix and adjusted it. It's still set to the factory defaults. With labor pricing, this is relatively new, I would say, in the last 10, 12 years. The industry began to look at labor pricing and said, hey, the greater the labor involved in a job, it's typically going to involve a more skilled tech. That more skilled tech costs more money. So it's one thing to have a B tech that's performing, say, a brake job, and billable hours or flat rate hours would be 2.0. It's another thing to have an engine overhaul, which is pretty rare, quite frankly, anymore. Most people do an engine replacement using a long block or what have you. But still, the point being that it takes a greater skill set at a higher cost and a reduced margin. So the labor pricing grid would account for that.
So smart. So much. We could talk about that for a whole hour itself. Talk to me about production staff incentives.
By and large, in our industry, Carm, while there are a wide variety of pay plans out there, and I've designed many of them based on what the owner wants and needs and based on the needs of that particular shop, but most of us, going back to WIIFM again, what's in it for me, the technician wants to be compensated in a fair and equitable manner. And it should not be complicated. He or she should be able to calculate what their pay is virtually on every job. The compensation plan based on flat rate would reward a technician for meeting or beating the time guide. So let's say it's a repair that he's familiar with and it pays 2.0 and he can get it done in 1.0 hours. He has greater incentive to beat that time and not lollygag around and drag his feet. He'll make sure that he has the right tools, the right equipment, the right training, and so on. His paycheck reflects directly on those.
Do you find shop owners reluctant to put incentive plans together?
Sometimes. Many shop owners want to pay based on clock hours. If a man works 40 hours a week, he's going to get 40 hours of pay based on X. And there are pros and cons to every compensation plan out there, Carm. I don't know that there's any one magic pay plan. You have to be able to motivate and incentivize the individual, especially service advisors.
I have heard a lot of talk about individualizing compensation plans.
Absolutely.
So even though I claim I have this one plan, no, this works for this person. This person wants more vacation time. This person wants more incentives. This person wants, you know, it's that person is growing their ASE program. So let's really make the ASE component heavier there. And maybe every year we look at something different.
That makes sense. It can get a little unwieldy, though, because let's say this, recalling a shop that I ran back in Atlanta, where I had 30 employees, including 18 techs. And you get that many people in one building all striving to achieve the same thing, and you try to personalize a comp plan, it can get unwieldy. It can get tough. Maybe one technician, he doesn't want more money. He wants off every Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock because little Johnny has baseball practice or a baseball game, what have you. So you try to accommodate, and then all of a sudden there's unrest amongst the rest of the staff because they'll say, well, why is he getting off Thursday at 3 o'clock and I can't?
Totally get that. I know that there are owners that do have varying plans, not with 18 people, maybe there's 4 or 5 people inside the team. You're right. You're staying close to your people, having the right culture, open and transparent communications could get over that.
Yes. And I'm a firm believer, talking about transparency and openness, I'm a firm believer in sharing financials to a certain degree, parental discretion advised, but letting the technicians know what the overall effective labor rate is of the shop. And many business owners don't even know how to calculate the effective labor rate. That's one of the first things that I do before I ever even go into the shop. I know what it is, and I share with them what it is. And they'll say, well, Scott, do I need to raise my shop labor rate? And I'll say, I don't know. It depends. I would go more for raising your effective labor rate, which is nothing more, Carm, than a ratio of billable hours produced against billable hours available. And there's a couple of different ways to look at that.
That was my next topic as we're getting ready to summarize this incredible interview. Let's go into effective labor rate.
If you take a technician that's on the shop floor for 8 hours a day, say it's a 10-hour day or a 9-hour day, you take out for lunch and so on, you have to look at certain things. You have to look at calendar utilization, which is merely a percentage of how much time he's actually on the floor. You have to look at break times. You have to look at down times. You have to look at shop cleanup. You have to look at all those variables. You have to look at menu sales, which are typically a reduced labor rate, but that impacts the effective labor rate. Historically, the effective labor rate is sometimes, I've seen it, a shop that has a door rate, a posted labor rate. I say posted, they shouldn't be posting anymore, but they have a door rate of maybe $120 an hour, but their effective labor rate might be $78 an hour. It's for that reason and that reason alone that I don't recommend walking in the door, hey, raise your door rate. We need to instead focus on the effective labor rate and how to raise that. Maybe they have a problem with dispatching and technicians are standing around not producing billable hours, and I crank it down to the tenth of an hour. And I look at what the cost is for the technician per tenth of an hour. And if he's standing around, oh, you have one technician standing around waiting for 8 minutes to get that job. Oh, now you have 2, 3, 4, 5 technicians also standing around waiting for work to be dispatched because you have a bottleneck on the service counter. So I go straight for the bottleneck, revamp that, look at that, find a way to fix it and reduce that, thereby raising the effective labor rate a little bit.
Page 77 in your book is 77, 78, everything's there. And it wouldn't be that difficult to figure out what your own is. Very impressed. You even have a picture of a calculator here. Here's the keys you press. Oh my God, it's just great. How much is this book? I mean, you're selling the book, right?
I am. It's available both on Amazon.com. The title of the book is How to Make Money and Stay Sane in the Automotive Service Industry. And it's also available on my website at automotiveconsultantsgroup.com. And you may want to go there first, Carm, because the thumbnails on my website are much larger, and I provide about 8 or 9 pages, the first 8 or 9 pages, including the very important table of contents, so someone can see what's really in the book and why it would be of value to them. And I will say the price of admission could be steep.
I'm not sure it is, because I'll bet you that person could make that money back by spending 2 hours with this book.
I agree. And that's why I said it. The worth of the thing is the price it'll bring. And there's so much information in that book that somebody can pick it up, flip through it, land on a chapter, and immediately apply some of the principles in the book.
So how much is it?
$132.95.
Doable. Absolutely. There's no doubt you can recover that. It'd be great to have a Scott Wheeler sitting next to me as I'm going down the new journey of reinventing myself in my business. But to have the book here, when Scott's not around, because I'm not going to talk to him, 8 hours a day, it's reference, the pictures, the guides, you even have a whole thing in here about environment. Some people just don't really think about that responsibility that they have and what to do about oils and tires and all that stuff. And it's pretty cool. And to your point earlier, it's not hard to turn your business around. It's not hard.
It really isn't. It's just taking the time to teach yourself things that you know you don't know.
Scott Wheeler, President, ACGI Automotive Consultants Group. Thanks so much for your great wisdom, man.
Thank you, Carm. It's been a privilege and an honor. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.